Please join us in Los Angeles for the 64th annual OA birthday party. It's on Friday, January 12th to Sunday, January 14th, 2024. Together we get better. In person at the LAX Hilton. Please visit oalig.org to book your room at a discounted rate. Registration opens in October 2023.
Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Frank, for asking me to share. Sorry, I don't have the format. And thank you, Vincent, for helping out there. Get some logistics out of the way. My top weight was 550 pounds. I am down to 190 to 200, depending on what month I weigh in. But that is my, you know, that is my abstinence. Or, I'm sorry, that's my weight range given to me by a doctor and my sponsor, not my own idea. I do have a abstinent date of June 15th, 2021, but I've been in program since the very beginning of 2020. I had to restart my time because I was a liar with food, as I was my whole life. But I got honest. I have a sponsor, I have commitments, I have a home group, and I have sponsees. I'm going to share my screen to do a few pictures. I always thought the pictures were kind of silly. But my sponsor was very much, wants it to be very clear how far this disease can go. So these are pictures of me. I was a very large man, and this was me my whole life. So I was always the biggest person in the room. I don't have the experience of being, a normal weight and then getting bigger later in life. My entire life, I was always very big. I was adopted. So I didn't really genetically, who knows what it is. I just found my biological parent or my biological father. And I can tell you that genetically, I didn't get whatever they got. They're all very beautiful, thin people. Not me. But I was always very big. By the time I was out of grammar school, I was over 300 pounds. And by the time I was out of high school, I was over 500. The one saddest thing in my life that I always share about is that at 17, my mother died. And at her funeral, I was sitting out on this bench trying to have a moment, and the bench broke. And I was like, I can't even experience my mother's death without being a monster, which is what I thought of myself as my whole life. Through my 20s, I was always practically immobile, but I walked around all the time. I got out. I stirred it up in life. But all through my 20s, I went between 550 and 350 starving myself and a lot of exercise and drugs. If I was at 350, I was looking great and I was killing it at life. If I was 550, I was kind of big. I legitimately never thought I had a problem with food. Like I legitimately never thought food was an issue. Fast forward to in my 30s, I moved to California. I pulled the geographic, didn't know what that was called, didn't have the language for it. I was not in program of any type up until I was 32, 33. That's when I found AA. And I only say that because without that program, I wouldn't have found this program, because I ended up getting sober with drugs and alcohol. And I only went to any of those meetings because I wanted to kill myself. I just wanted to kill myself. In 2019, I had cellulitis in my leg 11 times. And I had to go to the ER a lot of those times. I almost died twice because of the infection, and it was directly due to my food, my weight, and my drug use. I got sober. I found OA through happenstance. This woman at a show said she was sober. I was like, "Oh, I'm sober too." And she was like, "I'm not that type of sober." And then she brought me the next day after I asked her for help, because I was crying when she told me that she was in Overeaters Anonymous. She brought me to the Studio City meeting at 7:30 on a Sunday, and I heard the music. You know, I heard the well, I don't know if I heard the music. What I saw was people who were either really big or really small, and the really small people looked, showed me proof that they had once been my size. And then that same day, that same meeting, someone came up to me and told me about this group of men who, there's like no unilateral food decisions. We just, we get a sponsor and we get a food plan and we work a sober eating type of thing. And that made a lot of sense to me. So I got my food plan in January of 2020. And then COVID hit in March. And I was like, well, it's either I do this or I don't. And I did. And I did a lot of it my way. I restricted a lot. And I got into OA at about 400 pounds because, I lost a lot of weight on my own. So I was really good at that. I was really good at getting under 400 pounds. And that was me, that was my best efforts, and I was really good at it. Anyway, I got into OA at about 400 pounds, and then in the blink of an eye, without eating certain foods that trigger my disease, I was down to 200 pounds in the blink of an eye within like 7 to 9 months. And I was very honest with my food, but I was also Well, no, I wasn't honest. I was restricting a lot, Like I would go like, well, I could instead of doing this full plate, because that's my commitment to my sponsor, and it's still that same commitment. It's three meals, two snacks, whatever's on the plate, I eat, and that's it. There's really no weighing and measuring. I'll weigh and measure snacks just to have some, because I can make a big snack on a plate. But for my meals, it's just whatever's on the plate, whatever I can get on the plate, I eat, and that's that. But I was restricting a lot. And then I started taking my will back by adding more food secretly. So I got honest in 2021. And even before I got honest, life had gotten so good in program. I got my career back. I got a girlfriend. I got a dog. It was awesome. And then I restarted my abstinence and I was very honest. I never picked up my trigger foods, and I used to rely on that as like a good excuse. But I was a liar and I broke my abstinence. So I restarted and then life still got great. I got a fiance, I got another dog, I got a new car, my job took off, and I got we moved into a house that our dogs love. But I was fucking miserable, like just miserable. Just so upset all the time. And it's because I wasn't working this program. I was not working the steps. My sponsor kept trying to put me into working the steps, but I used this as a diet and calories club. And I hated coming to meetings. I went to every meeting. I talked all the time, but I hated coming here. I hated all of you. Fast forward to 2022, my dad got COVID and he has dementia. And then his wife died of COVID. And I had to go down to Florida to like, kind of help out. And I didn't want to do that. And I prayed. I didn't really pray. I had an idea of a higher power. I never really prayed, but I prayed on that. And then I had a spiritual experience where the job that I was going up to that day, at that moment, it was with a preacher's wife. By the way, I'm an insurance adjuster. I'm not in any way, shape, or form a faithful man or any of that shit. My job is insurance. But I was going to a job with this preacher's wife whose husband had just died of COVID, and on the door was the Serenity Prayer. And I figured if that's not God, I don't know what the fuck is. So I went down to Florida and it was just as bad as I thought it was going to be. It was awful. It was terrible. My dad is one of us. There I am, kind of a physical example of what could be. And he doesn't, I don't know if he doesn't care, or he can't understand it, whatever. But I helped him bury his wife. And then I came back and I only got through that with the program and my higher power. And I didn't eat over it. By the way, I still am absent from my restart date over 2 years now, of true abstinence. I don't fuck around. So I come back and then I finally start to work the steps. I get through the steps and it's really bad. It sucks. I hated it. I hated getting through, four and five. Six and seven was rough. And then I had amends to make. And I was thinking, like, what amends do I have to make? I just hurt myself with food. This doesn't make any sense. But I have been able to make amends directly due to working the steps now. I've been able to make amends to people that I never thought I would speak to again. One of the guys that I made an amends to would have been the best man at my upcoming wedding. But he's not, because I was a terrible person. But we talk now. We talk on an almost daily basis. I was able to make an amends to a guy that I put into prison. I never thought that would be possible, but it was through this program. So after I worked the steps, I started like really getting into like I now make this program a non-negotiable. I have sponsees. I hate sponsoring, but I love it. It really does help me. Being a service to others is, I won't lie, I don't look forward to it. I'm not a fan of it. I've made a lot of mistakes as a sponsor. I have not been the best, but I do try. I try my best. And do I succeed? Probably not, but I really try my best to like pass the message along. And through the mistakes I make, I learn a lot. I learn what to do, what not to do, blah, 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 blah. One of the things that that I was advised or told about myself before I started really working the steps and working this program as it is laid out in the book very clearly, is that I was an angry man. Very angry man. I never thought I was angry. I always thought I was pretty, like, I never thought I was controlling. Never thought I was angry. Never thought I had an attitude problem. I thought I was very lax and chill and cool. Not at all. I am a type A personality. I need to control everything. Blah, 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 blah. And my fiance, who, sees me and deals with me every day, has said multiple times throughout the last, I'd say, 6 to 8 months, how much better I am. Like, I don't yell anymore. Like I don't yeah, I used to yell all the time, not at her, but at the world, just into the ether. I'd slam doors, I'd do all this bullshit. I have not yelled. I couldn't even fucking tell you. A friend of mine in program recently said to me, because I drive a lot for work, so I'm always on the road. And he was telling me, he's like, wow, man, I've been calling you for the last few weeks and I never hear you curse anymore at other drivers. That was the thing. I would just yell and scream in the car, and I don't really do that. I get mad. I get frustrated. I get pissed off. I don't do the right thing. I'm not perfect, but that stuff has just kind of like been released. Another thing that's been released was when I got into this program. It's like I gave up drugs and alcohol. Thank God, that was released for me pretty quickly. I don't have a gambling problem, and I don't have from what I can tell a sex or a love problem. But how I did deal with a lot of my eating emotions for a while was shopping. I was a compulsive shopper. My closet, the rods in my closet have broken 3 times from the amount of clothes that I have hanging off of them. It's absurd. But what I could say is that that got released for me also really, really quickly once I did my fifth step, almost immediately that was taken away. And I never really asked for it to be taken away. I never gave a shit. I'm able to go shopping. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with I never had money when I was growing up. I was never able to fit into any clothes. Now I can fit. Now I have the same clothes that I've had for a few years and they all fit. You know, so like I'm sure there's a lot of ego involved with that and it makes me feel really good. But that has all been released. And I had heard my sponsor talking about this, how like a lot of my defects of character, I would say all of them, I've never worked on. Like I've never sat there and been like, okay, I'm not going to yell and scream today. I'm not going to, you know, buy a bunch of bullshit today. I've never had to do that. They just kind of go away the more I work this program. I'm in a lot of group chats with a lot of men, and we share our food. I have 8 group chats. I have 8 th text threads that I send my food to before I take a bite of every goddamn meal and snack, every single one. And those group chats really help, not just with accountability, but it helps me to like live out loud and share what's going on in my life in real time. Which it, I don't know how and I don't care how, but it just really helps me to not hurt myself with food. There's not one person in those chats that I see that I have 5 minutes left. Perfect. There's not one person in those chat groups that doesn't know everything that's going on with me. And that has never really been my reality, nor was it ever really my reality to be honest with food. I never thought I was dishonest with food, but I obviously was. So yeah, there's the living out loud part. I always try to bring this up because it really helps. It helped me when my sponsor brought it up a few times. So I have not had the urge, craving or obsession of sugar or white flour in over 3.5 years. I've not had that obsession or want, right? But every day I want more food. I want more food all the time. Every single day I want more food. God damn it. I'm always trying to figure out ways to add more food to my plate all the time. In fact, I was just at a doctor's appointment 2 days ago. And it has to do a lot with my stomach and all that. And he asked me, he was like, "When you eat, do you feel satiated?" And I was like, "You can't ask me that. You can't answer that. I can't answer that. I don't fucking know." I was like, "My brain's broken." But I always want more food. And if I eat like a side salad or a 96-ounce steak, I'm gonna feel the same type of like, you know, fullness. So it doesn't matter. And I'm happy that I know that because it helps me to know that when I have my meal, even if it's the same meal that some people look at when I'm with them and they go, "Jesus fucking Christ, that's huge." And I look at it and I go, "This is very small. I don't know how I'm going to make it to my next meal." It helps me to know that I will make it and I won't starve to death. By just having that knowledge that like, I always want more. It's never enough, no matter what. And that leads me into, for a while, I didn't rely on God. Like it took me a long time to kind of really put the connection together of like, if I'm honest with my food, then life will be good because I'll be able to be honest in life. And that took me a very long time to, I guess, realize. I always said I understood it, but I didn't really understand it. And even recently, almost every day, I'm able to realize it because I've been having to give up a lot. The road does get narrower, I can tell you that. Because of my medical issues, I've had to give up diet soda. I've had to give up caffeine. And these are all things that like they're not a part of my abstinence. Even my sponsor's like, "If it gets too hard, just fucking drink it. I don't care." But medically, like I gotta attempt this. And I drink a lot of coffee. Not anymore, but I used to drink up until 3 days ago, drank a lot of coffee. And I've had to give that shit up. And the first thing I think of now is to go to God. The first thing I think of now is to go to God. My dog got hit by a car a few months, 2 months ago. It feels like it was yesterday, yet it feels so far away. And the very first thing I thought was, well, not the very first thing, but after the shock and everything, I was like, "Well, I'm going to be making a lot of phone calls today and I'm going to be doing a lot of praying." And again, that's not really Chris. That's not what Chris does normally. I'm planning a wedding. I'm very excited. So hyped for it. And when I get worried about the price of everything and like how we're gonna, schedule it all and blah blah blah, I think of God. I think about God. And I wouldn't have that type of hope or dependence on something bigger than myself if it wasn't for the program. So I am very grateful for that. I ramble a lot, so I'm going to shut up now. Again, Frank, thank you for letting me share or lead. And that is it for me.
There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are their own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first three questions have been asked before raising your hand. If you have a question, please click the Raise Your Hand icon. And Chris, over to you again.
Sean, it's your time.
Thanks. Thanks, Chris, and a great pitch, man. I really appreciate you. You helped me so much. I learned how to eat healthy from you. I'm still eating carrots and hummus. And I like them now, and you're a miracle and a great example of our program. But I just wondered about if you could talk a little bit about the process of finding your alcoholic foods and the phenomenon of craving, and just maybe elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, man. Thank you, buddy. And I love you, Sean. There's like a worksheet and there's like a workshop for sober eating. But the best way that I like to describe it in regards to like my trigger foods and like the phenomenon of craving, I eat a lot of steak. I love steak. I don't even have like a like my commitment to my sponsor for steak is if it fits on the plate, fucking eat it, right? And one time my fiance won a $600 gift card to Ruth Chris and not even the best steakhouse, but we went out for dinner, had the steak, and I usually get steak and a vegetable, and I usually just get the asparagus, but they didn't have that there, but they had cream spinach. And I was like, yeah, I'll have cream spinach. I can eat cream and I can eat spinach, not a problem. Had the steak, had the cream spinach. The next day, all I was thinking about in my mind was this fucking cream spinach. Like, I just, like, all I could think about was how I could afford to go to Ruth Chris every day to have that for lunch. And I was like, what is going on? So I called my sponsor and I was like, hey, man, like, I'm having this obsession over, like, I don't even like spinach like that, but I was obsessing over it. And we ended up looking at the ingredients and there was flour in it. So he was like, well, we're not going to eat that anymore. And I think that that's like, for me, how I differentiate between I do not eat anything I don't like. I eat food that I love and like every day. I encourage anyone that talks to me or works with me, like you need to like your you need to love your food. You need to love your food. I cook mostly all my own meals and I love my food. But it like carrots and hummus. That's one of my favorite snacks. That's like a staple of my snacks, right? I have carrots and hummus as a snack. And do I look forward to it? Hell yeah. Do I eat it like an animal? Hell yeah, I do. But like the second that I'm done with that snack, the second I'm done with my steak or my whatever I'm eating, abstinently, the second I'm done with it, my mind kind of just goes to the next thing of like, what do we got to do for the day? Or when can I eat again? Or whatever. But like if my mind goes to obsessing over that food, then I call my sponsor and we talk about it, and then we make that differentiation between am I hungry? Is there something going on in my life that I'm avoiding? Or is this food triggering the phenomenon of craving? And I've thankfully only had to figure that out a few times. When I first got through my alcoholic foods, like the very first list I made, I haven't added much. But my alcoholic foods are, sugar, flour, rice, potatoes, peanut butter, and that's pretty much it. Which, sugar and flour, it might sound like a lot, but there's a whole other bunch I can eat. So yeah, that's how I kind of like to differentiate. If I can't, shake this food thought, then there's probably an issue that I'm either avoiding or this food has triggered my craving and I need to cut that out ASAP. And I hope that answered the question. Ryan.
Ryan, compulsive overeater. Thanks, Chris. My question for you is, so really connected with the honesty aspect. When you find yourself, because I often find myself feeling like I might want to be dishonest about something. Oh, it's not a big deal. It's just like this or that, like a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Other than kind of going to God for it, like, how do you catch yourself? How do you catch yourself and straighten yourself out?
What do you mean a little bit of this or a little bit of that? You're talking about food?
Yeah, like if it's like, oh, it's like a 15 calorie, like, you know, coffee or like a little, like a sugar-free chocolate thing I can put in something, you know what I mean? Like something really small that it's like nothing. And I'm like, oh, it's not a big deal. I'll have it, you know, while I'm here at this hotel or something, and I'm not going to have it again. Like, you know, so it's not going to be an issue. But it, like when I catch myself having those thoughts, like I know that's a slippery slope, but how do you stop that in its tracks?
Oh man. So, I mean, I want to add shit all the time, right? Like I just want like every time I want to add stuff. Not yesterday, the day before, I went into a gas station just to use the bathroom. And I literally walked in as they were filling out the pastry case and everything. It smelled, it was intoxicating, right? It was just intoxicating. And that second, I took my phone out and I texted someone and I'm like, hey, I'm at a gas station and these pastries smell amazing. It's not my food. And that's, dude, that is literally what, like, I am in constant contact with someone from our program every day. And the second I get a thought, like the very second I get a thought, I just text it out. And I just, and it's weird because, like, that's so, you know, it sounds kind of silly, but the second I text it out to somebody, it's out of my head. Like, it's out of my head. Like, if I'm hungry and I say, hey, I'm hungry and it's not feeding time, then, you know, it's just, it's out of my head. And yeah, that's what I do, man. I just kind of like get it out there into the open. Like living out loud is a big deal for me. Like a huge deal for me is to just live out loud. And my abstinence and my food, plan every day is very clear. Like there's no room for like, you know, there's no gray area, right? It's either can I eat it or can I not, you know, like there's no yellow light food or anything. There's no yellow light snack. It's just like, can I eat this? Yes. Great. Is it eating time? Yes. Great. Is it not? No. And then, you know, at that point, I got to rely on God or I got to text somebody or call somebody if it's that serious. Yeah. And that's what I do, man. I hope that answered the question. Awesome. Melissa.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much. That was fantastic. So can you tell us a little bit more about your relationship with God, how you develop that relationship, how you keep that going on a daily basis, what you do on a daily basis? Thanks.
Yeah. My first higher power was the idea of a flow of a river. That I had during my relapse and that didn't help. And there's a woman in this program who really helped me get a good conception of a higher power. What I started doing, because I was on the road a lot, is that I would talk to God as if God was in the passenger seat with me, and I would just talk and just talk into the ether, just talk into the ether. My spiritual practice to maintain a connection with a higher power has grown throughout the years, but I'm still a baby in this fucking program. But what I do now every morning, is the first thing I do is, I do one of two things first. Either I wake up and pray and I start out that prayer with, good morning, God. I love you. Thank you for another day, sober, abstinent, insane. And then I just pray. I just pray and I just talk to God and I tell him about my day and what all my plans are and all that shit. And then I send an email to my sponsor. That's another part of my abstinence, that I send an email out. I guess you could call it a 10 step. I don't know. But my sponsor, like, I send out what I ate yesterday, what I'm going to eat today, and then what's going right, what my plan is for the day, and what's going wrong. Or I'll do that first and then I'll pray. I've also begun meditating every day. That's become a non-negotiable. It was really hard for me to get into that habit. But now I do. And I only, this is embarrassing. I meditate for 1 minute. I do 1 minute of meditation. That's as much as I can do. Like, it, at this point in my journey, I can meditate for 1 minute. Anything above that, I can't do it. So I do 1 minute, and that's what I can do. My sponsor told me one, or, you know, he asked me, because I asked the same question you did. I was like, how do I get a higher power? How do I do this? And, you know, he said, he was like, well, with your fiance, like, you know, you talk to that girl every day, you know, like, you spend time with her. You made sure, you made it a serious piece of business to, like, put time and effort into that relationship. And that's what I have to do with God. I need to do that in some way, shape, or form every day with God. Either it's praying and meditating now. And, you know, now it's just the baseline of meditation and prayer. It helped really well, and it still does, but it's like, now it's just like the baseline. And now I'm not, you know, I might have to, you know, road and hours. I might have to start doing 2 minutes of meditation. Good God. How scary is that? That's how I started, and that's how I maintain it. And always, checking in with God during the day, which I don't do very well. I try, but I don't do that very well. That is something that, it's pretty hard to do. I hope that answered the question. Bob M.
Hey, Chris. Thank you for an incredible share. How important is service to you in this program?
Service is very important to me. I have a service commitment at almost every meeting that I go to, and I go to a meeting at least once a day. Sometimes it's twice a day. But, like, you know, I took this disease pretty fucking far. So I need to, like, make sure that I, you know, treat this as if I have, like, a terrible, terrible illness. And the only way to deal with it is by coming to these meetings. But service is really important to me. That's what I say. That's what I feel. I don't know if my actions show that. I answer any phone call from the program if I can, if I'm not on a roof, you know. But like I answer everyone that ever calls me, or I call them back. Whenever my sponsees call, no matter what I'm doing, I pick up the phone. It's a big part of my whole, you know, abstinence is being of service, and it's not easy. I don't want to be of service. I'm very selfish. I'm selfish with everything I have, especially my time. So when people call me, sometimes I'm not nice. Sometimes I'm not nice. I am not nice. I've answered the phone. I've done what I said I would, but I'm not nice. But whenever I'm asked to lead or speak, if I can do it, I do it. And by if I can, I mean if I don't have another thing on that day. And then I will take whatever other day they got. Commitments are very big for me. I always try to have some type of commitment at it. Almost every meeting I go to. And yeah. I hope that answered the question. Frank S.
Hey, Chris. Boy, I really loved your share. I revere your irreverence to life and everything else in the program. It's so beautiful. Tell me what your biggest challenge is moving forward.
Not eating. I mean, that's my biggest challenge is not eating. Like, if I was willing to bet money today on whether or not I'm going to break my abstinence, I'd bet money that I wouldn't, but I don't know. You know, like, my biggest challenge is my biggest challenge is just living life and not eating. I think that's what it is, right? Like, my biggest challenge is like acceptance. That's what is acceptance. I don't want to accept a lot of things that I have to do, or I'm told to do, or I get, you know, because what I, whatever I get, I don't want, I either don't want it or I want more of, you know? So I think my biggest challenge is acceptance of life on life's terms, because then if I'm not in acceptance of that, then I'm just going to want to eat, you know, I'm just going to want to eat food and just kind of like numb out and veg out from that. And if I get what I want, I'm still going to want to eat. I recently met my biological father. I was just in Thailand last week, met my biological father. It was amazing. It was awesome. And oh man, I wanted to eat out of celebration. You know, like we stopped everywhere. He has a food problem, but he has it like kind of, I guess, under control without the program. He's not obese or even overweight. He's smaller than I am. But, you know, he was eating whatever the fuck he wanted. And I was like, God damn. Like, you know, God damn. I would love to do that. But, you know, can't. And I had to accept that. So, yeah, I think going, I mean, just acceptance is my biggest hurdle. I think. What I would say is, yeah, it's acceptance. I hope that answers the question, man. Vincent.
So, Chris, you've been talking about, well, your biological dad, you know, your family. How has the program changed your relationship to, you know, non-program people like your family, your friends, your fiance? How has that affected your sort of life outside the program?
I'm more honest. I'm a lot more honest with people. And not like brutally honest, like, hey, you look fucking ugly today. But like, I'm just, you know, like I'm much more willing to make boundaries. And I'm much more willing to try to help people. Like I was a selfish and very manipulative person, my whole life. And a lot of my amends had to go to, obviously a lot of my amends had to go to my friends and family. So now I'm much more, available to them. I'm much more, open to help them whenever they need help with anything. I'm much more honest about my intentions with people, like intentions and what I expect or what I want, you know, like I don't go into something trying to go, oh, if I do this, maybe they'll do that. You know, I try to do that. I've become much more loving, to some people, not everyone, but to some people, I am much more loving and caring. And that has been really, really nice for that. And there's a part in the big book. I think it's at the doctor's opinion where it says, like, you know, you could trust whatever these men say about themselves. That is something that a lot of my friends have made a comment on. It's like, oh man, we can trust you now. You know, like we can, like whatever you say you're going to do, you know, like if you say you're going to show up, you show up. And that wasn't Chris beforehand. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.